Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
What is up, everybody? This is Adrian Hernandez of MileHighHockey.com and the Mile High Hockey Lab. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to talk all things Colorado Avalanche, as I like to say. I'm here today with Evan and Jacob so far. We might have Ezra joining the program as well a little bit later on. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, we're going to talk about Avalanche hockey. If you like what you hear and see, head on over to Twitter. Be sure to follow us at Mile High Hockey and at MHH_lab. We've got a lot to talk about, some pretty interesting stuff coming out of Avalanche camp as of late. And I think what I want to start with is just kind of the Darren Helm story and how he was spotted in a white jersey at morning skate today. We're not sure if he'll play for sure, but it was kind of an indication that he might. I'll start with our managing editor, Evan. Evan, if and when Darren Helm does return to the lineup, where do you see him slotting in?
Yeah, first off, it's great news that Helm is in a white jersey. To be honest, when it was announced that he'd, you know, re-injured himself back in, what was it, December or something like that, after only playing a few games, I was nervous for his career, really. I didn't think we'd get him back at this point. So he won't be in tonight. I know Bednar said that after morning skate.
Oh, he did say that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gotcha. And the goal apparently has been to have him play in Detroit on Saturday.
Interesting.
So
home, no place like home, I guess. Huh?
I know, no place like home. What a place to return to. So
greatest Red Wing ever.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, hopefully it works out for him. I mean, the fact that he's in a white jersey and traveled with the team, I think, is already a great sign. And out of the non-contact jersey as well. So I don't think I saw him like have any clips though where he was like actually like in drills with the team. I don't remember seeing anything.
I don't think I saw anything like that. I did see the picture that Katie Goss shared on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just what I was going off of. As you can see, I've put on the video of him scoring the game-winning goal, sending us into the Western Conference Final. But I guess this kind of segues me into a different conversation. And Jacob, I'll send it over to you. If and when, I think we have somebody joining the program too right now. Ezra, what's up, man? Thanks for joining the program. Happy to have you, buddy. Happy to have you. Oh, no worries, man. But we were just talking about Darren Helm and kind of his potential return and how he fits into the lineup. I was just about to ask Jacob, if and when, of course, he does do so. It seems like Eller and JT have secured that 2C, 3C area. And Newhook is now the 4C. How do you see that shaking up down the road?
I mean, I have to imagine Helm would be playing center, you know, especially since one of their biggest issues this year has been faceoff dot. And, you know, you bring Helm back along with Eller and Comfer, all of a sudden, like, the abs could turn a weakness into a strength there. You know, it is a tough conversation to have because Bednar all year has talked about how much more he wants Newhook in the middle. He thinks that lately he's been playing his best game in the middle. Mm-hmm. He loves what he's doing defensively. You know, I don't think there's any danger of Newhook like getting, you know, being a healthy scratch in any lineup. I think that Newhook is pretty much guaranteed a spot in any fully healthy Avalanche lineup. The question is just whether it's at center or wing, but, you know, just given how the Avs laid this season out, you know, before the avalanche of injuries derailed it, you know, the idea was to have Helm be a key bottom six center. You know, he was thinking about retiring last year. They brought him back. So they think very highly of him.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine he'd slot into center, but, you know, Newhook has played well enough that it wouldn't surprise me if they just kept Newhook there and then, you know, had Helm take faceoffs and then flip to winger once you get back into play.
Yeah, I think we've seen Newhook have his most success at wing, at least early on in his career. I don't know how that'll change as his career develops. But Ezra, since you've so kindly joined the program just in time, actually, I feel like, because I think I remember correctly when we first talked about Eller's acquisition, you were worried about how that might affect Newhook's spot in the lineup. You didn't want to see him moved down to the fourth line like he is now. I think initially he was on the second line, but has since been moved to the fourth. What are your thoughts kind of on how the center depth is stacking up, and what does a playoff lineup look like to you if all things considered everyone's healthy?
Yeah, I mean, the getting center depth is great. I think it's awesome that Eller has kind of meshed with O'Connor and Cogliano to form a nice checking line. And I like that the usage that the fourth line has been getting. It's not the fourth line that we were seeing in, you know, earlier in the season, where the fourth line's getting 5 minutes because it's Jacob McDonald and Curtis McDermott.
Right.
It's a fourth line that actually gets to play. So it does seem like there's a decent balance in the bottom six, and taking Newhook, calling him a 3C or a 4C doesn't really matter, but taking him out of that center position doesn't seem like a good call to me. Unless that does mean getting him play with Rantanen and McKinnon or something at the wing, because he seems like he's primed to break out if he gets that top six opportunity. Right. Helm fits the bottom six really well, but and like Jacob said, he can take faceoffs while technically playing wing if faceoffs from Newhook are an issue, which, you know, he's not great at it, but they're not really like a big issue in my opinion. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how he slots in. I think he probably bumps out Nieto if Malgin keeps scoring, or Malgin if Malgin stops scoring.
Yeah, and just to bounce off the faceoff thing, it's like I feel like it's only gonna he's only gonna take a faceoff in the event that it's an icing or everyone's that actually that might be the only way I can see Newhook taking like an important faceoff is if they have no choice but to let him. Yeah. So I just kind of like think it's funny how all year it's been gotta get 2C when we might have like six reasonably good NHL centers once everyone's healthy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to find a place to put Alex Newhook because we're going to have too many centers. So that's going to be a good problem to have. And not to mention Nathan McKinnon, who scored 9 goals in the last 9 home games. I mean, if he keeps going at this pace, what are we really worried about at center anyway? that's just my opinion. I guess, and I'll go to you, Evan. What does the playoff lineup kind of look like to you? My question is, who's your healthy scratch in the bottom six when everyone's healthy?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess. All right, let me ask a question back. Is okay. Landeskog back for the playoffs?
Yeah, everybody's back. Say it's game one, everyone's here.
Okay. Let's see, because then Erod would probably go down to the third line. Cogliano would go down to the fourth line. I think that would leave either Nieto or Malgin stretched, I feel like. At least just picturing it in my head anyway, because I'm imagining the typical top six, you know, Nichushkin, Rantanen, Landeskog, McKinnon.
Yeah.
Confer you threw up there, Lekkonen. So, you know, those six are not moving anywhere. And then probably the Rodriguez, Newhook, O'Connor. And then
I don't know about O'Connor. Yeah. And I think O'Connor might be in the mix in terms of a healthy scratch just based on his production and matchups. Like, if there's a matchup where it's like we know there's going to be a lot of space on the ice and a lot of scoring, like, I think you give Malgin's based on what we've seen currently from Malgin, I think you give him the ice time, hoping that you don't have to rely too much on the PK. That's just kind of my thoughts on the matter. Ezra, do you think that makes sense? Like those three guys, I think you're onto something there, Evan.
I mean, I think if we're putting Helm and Landeskog into the lineup, then the only thing that makes sense to sit, the only people that make sense to sit to me would be Nieto and Malgin, because you do need O'Connor as a penalty killer. He's so good at it.
Yeah.
He is essential to that penalty kill unit. I know that there's been some talk in the Avalanche world that he's been disappointing in some ways. And
Malgin? That's crazy. O'Connor.
If you want
to
sit him
for a game to be like, hey, dude, get your game back together, fine. But I don't really know why you would want to. I haven't had any problem with his game. He's exactly who he's always been.
Yeah. He's not ever been a guy who's like all over the score sheet. So I'm with you. I don't really know what people are expecting from him other than what he's been giving, which is just like a guy who's always been hard on the puck, first to the loose pucks, and good on the penalty kill. It's funny because he reminds me like of another guy who seems to have learned a lot from Calvert in his time exposed to Calvert. So I think as long as that component in his game is there. I think you guys are right. He'll probably stick around in the lineup. So that kind of just leaves, like you said, Malgin and Nieto. Nieto's got the experience, but Malgin has the production right now. Evan, what you got for me?
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned a great point about, you know, maybe fitting a system or like
matchups.
Right. Matchups, that's the word I'm looking for. Because we saw that last year with Newhook. He sat out the first, what was it, three games of that Predator series? Right. So I remember walking into the building for game one and seeing on my phone that Newhook was scratched, and I was like, huh?
Yeah.
Why? And, you know, it worked. I mean, you swept Nashville. Now, then again, it was Nashville. But then again, you never know. You make a good point about that, though. But, you know, I'm in the same boat as Ezra. I don't know why you would scratch him unless it is for that matchup sake. But then again, I'm not an NHL head coach. So here we are.
Well, that kind of segues nicely into our live poll of the week, which is centered around kind of the success we've seen Dennis Malgin have in his 25 games with the Avalanche. He has 8 points, 6 goals, and 2 assists. I posed the question on Twitter, which unexpected player performance has been the most surprising to you? And the choices were Evan Rodriguez, who has 30 points in 53 games played, JT Compher, who has 42 points in 64 games, Dennis Malgin with the 8 and 25, as I previously mentioned, and then I left an other write-in option for fans. Let me look and see currently what everything's sitting at. But while I do that, Jacob, what's your vote on this poll?
I mean, Malgin, I think, is probably like the correct answer just because the expectations were basically zero. You know, they got him for practically free. And so getting this kind of goal scoring contribution is pretty surprising. But at least for me personally, I go with JT Compher. You know, if you pull up some old episodes from earlier this year of this podcast, you'll see me seriously doubting whether or not he's an actual 2C. You know, I always used to say that I feel great about Compher if he's your 3C, but I don't know about him at 2C. But now, like, I'm convinced. I think he's a legit 2C in this league. He's a good two-way forward. You know, basically he's doing a little bit better than the production that Kadri had before his breakout year. Like, that's legitimate second-line center.
Yeah, and that's coincidentally how the fans are voting right now. We got 181 votes. JT Compher leading the way with 59% of the vote. So a pretty strong margin given the fact that there's 4 options. Ezra, can you expand on that? Do you agree with the answer?
I do. I also voted for JT on that. I think it's not even the production so much as it is the consistency, because he's always been capable of putting up stats like this. Sorry, I'll silence my phone. He's always been capable, but you know, we've seen stretches of it, but we've seen stretches of really bad play. And I think with JT, he's eliminated those stretches of bad play. He's currently in a 5-game goalless streak, I should say, which is probably his worst of the season. I haven't looked to confirm that, but he's been making a difference in other ways, and he's really found a way to be effective at that 2C position, whether he's scoring or not, while putting together his highest scoring season of his career. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I pretty much, you guys all know this and the rest of the world does, I've always thought JT was a little bit better than people had given him credit for. And it is based mostly on the fact of his play stylistically and how he'd grown within that role, playing a lot of 3 and 4C earlier on in his career with the Avalanche. So I agree with you. I think it's interesting that you mentioned he's right on pace with where Kadri was before he had his breakout year, because that leads me to my next question. All 3 of the options are guys who are on expiring contracts this year. Which of the 3, if not all of the 3, would you bring back, Jacob?
I mean, the question really boils down to me, like, what is the term on Compher? Because the issue with Compher, you know, obviously you say resign the best player, is they have Devon Toews and Mikko Rantanen coming up. And if you give Compher too much, that might mean that they don't have enough money for Toews, and he's certainly gone. I know a lot of people are expecting Toews to be gone, but I think that's far from a certainty at this point.
Okay.
But if they sign JT Compher, I think it does become a lot more certain, because Compher's, you know, played himself into a pretty big payday.
Yeah.
And so for me, it might be a guy like Malgin, because you could probably re-sign him for cheap, you know, use them as bottom 6 reinforcements and go and try and, you know, find another $2 million a year Evan Rodriguez type this offseason.
Evan, what do you think?
I mean, it's definitely a tough choice, because I'm big on Malgin. I voted for him in the poll, and It's actually convenient timing. I bet you probably checked our back end site and I saw I had a piece about Dennis Malkin.
I didn't, but I did. I saw it after the fact and I was like, oh yeah, nice.
Well, there you go. So I agree with Jacob though. Like Malkin definitely be the easier one, I feel like. And yeah. You know, he's on a league minimum 750K right now contract. And you know, I feel like Malkin would be at best asking for maybe a little over a mil. But then again, I know you mentioned Taves, Jacob, and I know that kind of the big talking point has been, oh, Sean Behrens will then be ready to come right in and replace, you know, Devon Taves. Behrens, I know he's been hurt this year at DU, so I don't know how well that statement could be true, I guess. So then it's really, where do you go for defensive pairings afterwards? And of course, EJ may retire at the end of this year, at the end of his long contract. So who really knows? Like, I would love to have Comfer, but it could be like a same Kadri kind of scenario where, you know, you lose him just because he's earned that payday. But I don't know. I'll say Malkin and Rodriguez. They re-signed those two. I say Rodriguez maybe a little bit higher than what he's at now, and then Malkin, same thing. So,
yeah, I agree with all of you in terms of your thoughts on like the context of the situation. I wonder if JT Compher's role is more valuable to this team than Devon Taves is in the big picture. And I wonder, based on what you guys have just told me, if that's the choice really. Because Malkin, like you said, you can bring him back on a pretty affordable basis on a shorter term. Probably Evan might be a little more pricey.
He would be.
But I think you could still find a way to fit him into the budget. Therein lies, though, the JTC and Devon Taves debacle, because they can't both get a share of what's left. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think that math quite adds up. So,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to have JT back. If we can find a – what's his current cap hit? Isn't it like
– 3.5, yeah.
Okay, 3.5. I mean,
he's probably coming in at, what do you think, 6, 7?
5.
I was going to say 5. Yeah. Whose contract did I compare him to not too long ago?
That's Strome?
Was it Strome? No. I think it was Strome.
Yeah, Strome was a recent contract. I remember we talked about him in comparison to JT when he
said yeah. So I was thinking like that is probably a good like perspective that you can look at. Like, oh, that could possibly be what JT's going to be looking for, right?
On the other hand, though, what's Tay's going to get? 8, 9?
Yeah, he's going to get he would get a lot.
I feel I'm not saying he's not good because he is, but is that where he's really valued at, or is that where the marketplace is placing him in terms of?
Well, look at who he's playing with. He's playing with Cale freaking Makar, Makar has he's said it time and time again. Devon Taves is the most underrated defender in the NHL, just because he can keep up with Makar, and you know they're really great partners with each other.
He's one of the best defensemen in the league. Plus, like the issue with trying to figure out exactly what he should be paid is it's 2024 when he comes up, and the cap might jump a little bit more, and so maybe that affects his valuation. Like that's the tricky part with figuring out contracts right now is that like. In the current context of the cap, Nathan McKinnon's new deal looks like a big, pretty expensive deal. But, like 3-4 years from now, if the cap does what everyone's expecting it to, that's going to look really reasonable again. And so, like, maybe they do have extra room if they structure these contracts right to have both Comfer and Taze. Like, a lot of it does depend on what the cap is doing. We know it's going to be $1 million more next year, but after that is the expectation for it to really start to jump.
Yeah. I what do you think, Evan?
I mean, the cap obviously does play a huge part of this. I mean, if it jumps up, $2 million in 4 years, that it'll be definitely it'll help the Avs at least on that front. I'm trying to think of who else you have to worry about in the future. You've got
Miko.
Who's after Miko? We're gonna have.
Not much after
not that. Much really. Yeah. Maybe Gerard like a few years later.
It does really hinge on what happens with Newhook and Byram,
Yeah.
If those guys progress the way that we want them to, then they take those big money deals that we're talking about for Comfer and Taves. But counting on Byram to be Taves seemed like a reasonable thing to do like a month ago, but his play recently, I don't know. I still think he has that ceiling, but he's been pretty rough defensively lately. So he's got a ways to go before he's making that money.
And this is a good time for us to touch a little bit on what we saw from Gabe Landeskog today and some video courtesy of Evan Rawal. And I think Brennan was out there too. I have the video right here. It looks, and this is kind of what they were communicating, is that it looks like he's, and I quote Evan, he remembered how to skate again. because he's definitely got a more natural gait to it, and he's definitely testing out his edges in a way that he hasn't up to this point in his recovery. Jacob, does this excite you, or does this make you feel like he's still pretty far out?
No, this excites me. Every video of him that we've seen the last, month or so, basically since he first hit the ice, he's putting more and more pressure on his knees and, just really testing out what he can and can't do right now. And I just really think the fact that they didn't go after a top six forward at the deadline makes them think that he is coming back for the playoffs. And so that combined with every video that we see, he's getting, just stronger and faster and looking more like a hockey player. I'm going to remain encouraged until there's bad news.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Ezra, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, that's such a good point, Jacob, because really they did tell us what they're thinking about the injuries with what they traded for, which is just a goalie. So Frankie's maybe the most concerning injury right now. Johnson's ahead of schedule. Landeskog's obviously behind schedule, but on his way back. And we'll see what happens with Manson. That was a last minute surprise, so it's hard to judge based on that. But seeing him skating like that, man.
Well,
it does. Coincidentally,
yeah. Well, and coincidentally, like if we're going by the logic that you guys are talking about with how they acquired players and what that means about injuries, then that probably means the same for the defensive group, right? Like they're counting another defender that us fans weren't at the deadline, which it seems more and more like that person is Eric Johnson. He's been skating pretty hard in the videos we've seen. He looks like he's pretty much good to go, but I think the verbiage used was they're waiting on x-rays, which is hilarious because I think it takes like 2 seconds for a doctor to glance at an x-ray these days. But Evan, what is your thought on the EJ situation, and do you think we're onto something in terms of not acquiring guys because they think these other dudes are coming back?
Yeah, I mean, especially for EJ's sake, because I know that was the big talking point was that, he has a broken ankle. He's going to be out for 2 months. Put him on LTIR. This is only a couple days before the trade deadline. Put him on LTIR. We've got money now, and let's go get somebody, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that, I've seen it, in our comments, in our Twitter replies. Like, why didn't the Avs make any moves at the deadline? Because they had no freaking assets to make it happen.
Yeah.
They have the money. Absolutely, they had the money. You could probably bring in somebody from Landeskog's contract alone and one or two guys and have that for March. And then, at this point, probably with Landy's status, he would be here beginning of April, middle of April, right when the playoffs are about to start. So then you could just have him rest up even more before the playoffs start.
Yeah.
So, they didn't make moves because
assets. Yeah, it would have been a fleecing in favor of the Avalanche. So basically, it was a matter of trying to get other teams to agree to giving up lopsided trades.
Exactly.
That's, what are we doing here?
And I almost wonder too. Make that
trade. What's that, Jacob? I'm sorry.
Look what Hurdle went for. They absolutely literally couldn't make that trade.
Yeah,
exactly. Like the Avs had no assets. Yeah. They had no assets. They had the money, but no assets. And I almost wonder too if the Avs were, calling and, trying to see what moves they could make with the limited assets that they had. I wonder if teams were also asking about the cap hit for the Avs and like, is Eric Johnson really going to be out for that long? Yeah. Is he really going to be out until the start of the playoffs, So that's also something to consider. So I'm happy though that EJ is, coming back. At least it seems like a whole lot sooner than most everybody thought. So that's definitely nice. And we're going to get the Johnson and Johnson pairing again. Oh boy.
Yeah. This was Chris McFarland on trade deadline day.
Price is wrong, bitch.
But yeah, so I agree with you. I think it doesn't make sense that there's just not the assets for the Avs to have made any moves. And I'm glad that we're starting to see the thought process come to life as these guys seem to be getting healthier. And I think that'll reassure some of the fans that are a little bit more I don't know, unsure at all times, I guess. But I'm optimistic, especially for the fact that, like, you know, like Jacob and you mentioned too, Evan, like the timing for Landeskog, it's going to be pretty good. Depending on how he is in terms of game shape, it could be really good. Like if he gets out there and for whatever reason he's been hitting it hard on the bike and it just works, his heart's going, then what we're going to see a pretty good Landeskog. I'll say this. I bet you in the first two games he goes off and then he'll get the adrenaline dump and it'll be like, oh, this is why this is hard. I totally forgot. So that's like, you know, like I said, I'm optimistic and I'm happy to see Landeskog skating a little better. And if you saw in the video, he was also waving to one of the children that were watching in the family sports center. So he's also in good spirits, it seems like, which is positive news for Avalanche fans. That kind of leads us into our next segment where I want to talk a little bit about some of the games coming up on the road trip for the Avalanche, starting with the Montreal Canadiens tonight in Montreal, of course, because I already said it was a road trip. But Ezra, how do you see this matchup shaking up? I know Canadians are kind of seemingly an inferior opponent. Is it safe to say that the Avs have like three games like that where they play teams that are kind of bottom barrel teams? Is it safe to say they need to get all 6 points in those three games?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I think yeah, anytime you have an opportunity to rack up points against teams that aren't playoff competitive, you need them. The Western Conference games are more important, frankly, to keep other Western Conference teams down. But yeah, I think they need those points. And I think the matchup with Montreal, I mean, it's a lot like the Arizona game, potentially, where they have one line of good young players who can make something happen, potentially. But then they're mostly just guys who are in the way. But Arizona was very effective at being in the way. You know, the Avalanche dominated that game and couldn't put the puck in the net. So what do you do? They have to limit mistakes, and the third period in Arizona was incredible. If they can hold the team to zero shots, I think they'll be okay. But it's unlikely, you know, and they have to make sure they avoid the dumb mistakes that, like, MacKinnon made on that second goal where he just completely didn't track somebody. You have to be sound defensively, even against bad teams. That's what I'm looking for in this game.
Yeah, and I'll bounce that over to you, Jacob. Are you worried about this matchup similarly to kind of when we play the Yotes and they seem to give us their best look? Do you think we'll get the Habs' best look tonight in front of the home fans?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Habs aren't a great team, and like the headline is they're on a 6-game losing streak, but if you look at every one of these games, they're all 1-goal games except for the last one against New Jersey, and it's against 5 teams currently in the playoffs. Like, it's very clear that even though they're struggling right now, if the Habs take a period off against Montreal tonight, like they've been likely to lately, that could be it. That could be the difference that loses them this game. And so, I think that unless they play 3 full periods, I'm not sure they come out with both points tonight.
Yeah, and Evan, you love a lot of the players for the Arizona Yotes. And is there a similar likening to any of the players on the Canadiens, or are you just picking on the American low market team?
I do like Nick Suzuki. I feel like he's probably a good comparison to like a Clayton Keller, I guess, on Montreal. But I mean, outside of that, it's really hard to see where they stand. I know that their rookie, what's his name? Your Slavkovsky, I know I'm pretty sure he's out still with his injury. So don't have to worry about him and you know, his skill and things like that. I think really the only thing I'm concerned about tonight is just don't get goalied, especially because it's Jake Allen. Jake Allen has struggled.
Sub 900 save percentage and like three and some goals against average.
Exactly. So, yeah. So like if we get goalied by Jake Allen like we did by Connor Ingram for the second time in the span of a year, then I'll be like, what the heck, guys? So just don't get goalied, please. That's all I ask. Just finish the chances, finish them off when you can.
Ezra, are you worried about getting goalied?
I mean, always,
It always seems to happen with the Avs, and I don't know how.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they made Connor Ingram look pretty good last night. Just the way that everything was bouncing. It was hitting him and then bouncing right to somebody to clear it. It wasn't really like the Avs playing poorly is not what I mean when I say they made Ingram look good. But I don't think he was, like, outstanding. He just – all the bounces went his way all night. And
well, they had, like, 17 empty nets. And they just kept going over the top of the bar. And I was like, I don't even know why you guys are trying for the top shelf right now. Just put the puck into the net.
Right. It was so frustrating. But yeah, Jake Allen's not very good. So, it shouldn't happen again, but we'll see. I mean, he's been above average for most of his career, but now he's below average, I'd say. So, still, I don't know. He's still solid. I do want to add to players on the Canadians who are worth watching.
Yeah.
They have Kirby Dach and Cole Caulfield, who, you know, good young players that could be something. Caulfield obviously went to Wisconsin, so I'm a fan. But, you know, it is Nick Suzuki for number one for sure, like Evan said.
We should do a weekly Badger update where you just tell us what's going on in
Badger. I don't want to talk about it.
It's not a good year to do a weekly Badger update, I guess.
There hasn't been a good year to do a Badger update in a while.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. Well, that'll be the segment. What's the update from Badgersville? It's not good.
Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Jacob, one of the pieces of former Avalanche prospect pool, Justin Barron, is a Canadian. What do you think of his time with Montreal so far, and do you see him making an impact soon?
I mean, if you're him, you want to make an impact tonight, right? Like, even if there's no hard feelings, at the very least, it's a team telling you we like somebody more than you, and so you want to stick it to him. So I would expect him, to play well tonight. He's kind of had an up and down game. Most of what I know about him is from my friends who are Canadiens fans, and so they can be a little emotional. So I don't know if I have like the most accurate information, but it does seem like every month people up in Montreal have a new opinion on him, which is generally like that comes with the territory of a young defenseman. You know, they take longer to develop than other positions, and so I think eventually he will find the consistency in his game. That was always kind of his hype as a prospect is that for a young guy, he's a lot more consistent than you would expect. And so I would imagine eventually he feels it. It's just, for when you're playing on a bad team, everybody feels like they're drowning. And so it's very hard to keep your game consistent.
Yeah. I think that's
to check if he was in the lineup, like the projected lineup on Daily Faceoff for tonight. And he's not, but also neither are Cole Caulfield or Kirby Dach. So
well, it's so good that we highlighted those three athletes.
I mean, I thought that might be the case with Barron. This could be one of the months where they don't like him. Again, it's been a while since I've heard anything from him, so I assume he's in the doghouse.
Maybe. Jeez. I completely forgot that Barron was here, but then again, that also reminded me, and looking through Twitter again this morning, that this is Lekkonen's first game back in Montreal.
Yeah, should get a tribute.
That's a big deal. Oh, he'll definitely get a tribute video, 100%. So that's a big deal. I mean, I remember I saw a picture on Twitter this morning of the tiny little away locker room down there at Bell Center, and it's just packed with people surrounding Arturi Lekkonen. So I wonder what his emotions then will be like tonight.
Well, he'll probably be slightly overwhelmed by the media coverage because he's probably not used to it having left so long ago, but just to kind of add to that, we don't really know who to talk about tonight for the Canadians, but we definitely know who to talk about for Wednesday night's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, which kind of poses the biggest and most significant threat to the Avs in the recent schedule. What are you most keen on in that matchup, Jacob? And kind of what do you expect from that game?
I mean, the thing that I'm most interested to see, I think one of the underrated themes of this year has been how solid the Avs have been defensively. Like, we've been kind of freaking out over, the lack of goal scoring and how they can be a little inconsistent. But they've played really well defensively. Bednar put together Compher, Nichushkin, and Lekkonen on the second line. It seems like he's going to run with that for a little bit. And he liked how well they played defensively. And so, if you want to try to measure how good your team defense is, Toronto is about as good of a challenge as you're going to have. And so, as interesting as that game is, a lot of people will hype it up. It's Matthews versus MacKinnon. This could be like a 6-5 game. If the Avs win that game like 3-1, I am going to be so optimistic about where they're headed, because this is about as big of a test as they're going to get the rest of the way.
Yeah, and the big guys on like NHL Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, they are like really about how the East is just far superior than the West. But like we've always said, I don't think that matters. because it's one series at the end of the day. Yeah. So it's really one. Are you better than the team in front of you when it comes down to
that's
that?
That's a problem for the East. That's not a problem for the West.
Exactly. So adding to that, Evan, what do you think the chances are that like the East beats up on each other before that? And I feel like even last year, Tampa was kind of behind the eight ball in terms of games in as many days as the Avalanche, who swept the Western Conference Final and had plenty of rest. You see that being a factor in the playoffs?
Oh, 1,000%. The East is beating each other up. Remember, it's the arms race versus the fingers race that Ezra coined not too long ago. I mean, the East is going to beat up on one another. And, you know, we talk about Toronto all the time and that they're not able to get out of the first round and things like that. I'll be genuinely concerned if they don't get out of the first round this time.
Yeah.
Like, of course, I want it for the meme. Want it for the meme.
Yeah, Toronto, the yearly meme.
Like, as of right now, they're playing Tampa Bay in the first round.
So, I know, they're doing it again. And so, you know, it'll be definitely interesting to see how Colorado faces up. And defensively, too, that's a really great point, Jacob, that you made about the defensive aspect. Because, of course, it's all about McKinnon and Marner and Matthews and all
scores.
Of them.
Yeah,
exactly. So if the Avs are able to shut them down defensively, then that's great. And
yeah,
that would be a great, you know, sign of things to come. Cause we've seen the defensive collapses. We saw that against Dallas. They could not. Well, Dennis Mulligan's giveaway just is still in my mind from that game. So we've seen that. We've seen, you know, recently, I mean, even Coyotes, McKinnon lost track of him. Seattle, McKinnon lost the puck behind the net, give Seattle the tying goal with 2 minutes left. So if they're able to clean it up defensively against a really hot offensive team, then I'm really looking forward to the last, you know, month of the season if they can do that for team that they play.
They seem to end their last contest with a focus on defense, giving up zero shots after like late in the second period, none in the third and none in overtime. So that does seem to be the focus for the Avalanche right now. And Ezra, if the Avs do win the Stanley Cup this year, I'm going to draw a t-shirt that's two fingers holding up a Stanley Cup, and it's going to say Fingers Cup Champions, but our Fingers Race Champions. But, you know, if you saw Marner's goal a couple nights ago, he's got really slick hands, and we've been talking about the Avs performing well defensively. How big of a game is that for Alexander Georgiev in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge test for him. Especially if the Avs don't defend super well, then it'll be an even bigger test for him. But yeah, I mean, he hasn't had to face shooters of the Matthews Marner caliber that frequently recently. So yeah, that'd be a huge test for him. And I think he's played those guys enough as a New York Ranger that he's probably familiar with them to some extent. But yeah, that's always going to be a big test.
Well, yeah, and anytime you play a team with the firepower like the Leafs, like the penalty kill is going to be something. And by that I mean don't kill very many penalties, like stay out of the penalty box. When the Avs are on these trips, it seems like they have a little more success, at least in this era of success. What do you attribute that to, Jacob? Is it just kind of like they have a tight-knit group and they seem to like fall back on each other when they're away from home?
Yeah, I remember they've talked about this a little bit before about how they really do enjoy road trips together. They do see it as a time for bonding. That, you know, when they've talked about how at home, you know, you leave a game and you just all kind of all go back to your respective homes, but when you're on the road, it's like, hey, let's, you know, I'll take the whole team out to dinner. And so there's just like a more of a sense of camaraderie, it seems, on a lot of these road trips, where everyone is kind of on the same agenda. Whereas at home, you know, you've got a million different things that you've got to take care of yourself. Whereas the, you know, road trips, it's simplified a bit.
Yeah. And that's funny, because it kind of speaks to a little bit of the rhetoric around why the Avs felt more comfortable in game 6 of the Stanley Cup final than they did in game 5 of the Stanley Cup final. Evan, do you think that it's just because they're allowed to focus more on the hockey itself when they're on the road?
I guess so. You know, there's less distractions, probably.
You're Lekkonen.
Well, not if you're Lekkonen. Besides that fact, of course. And probably Mulligan, too, on Wednesday night when he's in Toronto. But, you know, I think there's definitely that aspect. There's the camaraderie aspect. You can go home and you don't have to worry about, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, doing the dishes, I guess, or something like that. You know, you don't have to change the diapers. Like, you don't have to worry about that. You can you can go home and you can go back to the hotel and do whatever you need. You can be like Georgiev and, you know, just bring a bunch of books to read. You know, things like that. So
the Harry Potter guy.
I know. Good for him. Good for him. I like it. I like it. He probably captured a lot of people's hearts.
Exactly. I wonder what his favorite Harry Potter book is, and that's a question you only get if you have that article floating out there in the world.
I know. That'd be a good question to ask.
Yeah. So I feel like we can just kind of open it up and see if you guys have anything you guys wanted to talk about. I'll start with you, Ezra. Is there anything kind of pressing for you that we haven't touched on yet?
Anything pressing? I mean, I do want to touch on Byram a little bit. I feel like defensively, he's been really struggling. It's been, we have such high hopes for him, and I think that they're right, and I think he will become the player that everybody wants him to be. But this last stretch of games has been real rough. He's been caught out of position like a number of times. He's falling on goals. He's all over the place a little bit. I think I heard a stat the other day that he gives up the most high danger chances on the team by like a long margin.
Really?
He has given up the most high danger chances on the team by a big margin. I'm just curious. What do you guys think about that? What have you seen?
Greg Carville, the UMass hockey coach, repping UMass today, has actually talked about this with puck moving defensemen who skate really well. But one of the things he kind of has to teach them is to not overskate too much, so that essentially they just get it into their heads that, you know, they can skate to wherever they need to be, where a lot of it is, you know, you kind of want to glide is, I think, the word that he used to whatever position you're in. And then, you know, then if you're in recovery mode, lean on your skating ability. But he's talked about how for guys who are really elite skaters, that it's kind of difficult to train them, you know, to think I don't have to like really, you know, chug my legs every single time. Maybe just a couple strides gets me to where I need to be, and then I can use my stick. You know, that's what makes Devontae so masterful, is that he is able to, you know, just create this big giant buffer zone around him with his positioning and his stick work. And I think that's, you know, Byram would do well to learn a lot from how Tays defends, because he, you know, he doesn't, Ezra, you're right. Like I said, he's falling all over, he's scrambling all over the place. And I think a lot of that is just the game is sped up. He's making mistakes, which, you know, speeds up your game even more. And then you just kind of lean on what you know best, which for him is his skating ability.
Evan, what do you think of that?
I didn't even realize that his what was the stat again? Good Lord. This is what
high danger chances.
High danger chances. This is what happens when you're on spring break and it's just woo.
Yeah. Anyway, that's for real. I'm surprised you don't have a beer in your hand, even though I know that's not legal on YouTube. But what are we doing here? It's spring break, man.
I'm surprised though to hear that from Byram. I think that also makes me question, you know, how many games has he played without Manson? Because obviously that connection between the two of them is vital. Byram was out for a long period of time, and now Manson's had two stretches where he's been out, including now. You know, that probably doesn't help him at all, because he's paired with Sam Girard. And I feel like those two are somewhat similar, somewhat comparable in terms of like the skating ability and like being able to move the puck well and things like that. So when you're trying to play defensively with another offensive defenseman, I guess. Oh, but then you could look at Makar and Taves doing the exact same thing. So I don't know, really, to be honest. I think it's just kind of that chemistry and partnership that Byram has with Manson that he's been missing, you know, for probably a good chunk of the season. So I'd be interested to see kind of what Byram's numbers are with Manson, what they are without Manson.
Yeah, we'll look into that. We'll talk about it next week. That's a good thing to check out. I find it interesting that fans are a lot more forgiving for a guy like Bowen Byram than they are for a guy like Sam Girard, because you wouldn't know that Bowen Byram was leading the team in terms of giving up high danger chances based on how people talk about him online. But you would think that that's Sam Girard's statistic based on how they talk about him online. So that's kind of interesting. Jacob, I'll give you the floor. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
I mean, I think we can return to the discussion of a playoff lineup, because, like, for good reason, the focus has been on the bottom six, because that seems to be where the most moving parts are. Someone's got to sit. The top six, I think, is really interesting, too, because that's unsettled. You know, does Mikko, like, with Landy back, do they put the big line back together and go with, you know, Comfort and Shushkin and Lekkonen, or do they split the big guys up?
That's a good question, especially like you said, the top six. That's going to be a balancing act, and I bet Bednar is pretty liberal with how he kind of changes things up there. Because I feel like what we've learned from Landeskog's absence is that the top six is pretty good, even without Landeskog. Mm-hmm. So if you can find a way to even to put, like, my thing is Landeskog stylistically more suited for a third center type of role, or third line type of role? Maybe not minutes wise, but also maybe minutes wise if he's coming back from being out the entire season. So it's like, you also don't even know, it might not change at all. What do you think, Ezra?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think when I was thinking about him coming back, you know, in the season, I was thinking, well, working back into the lineup next to Newhook as a third line, I think that makes sense. You know, let him get his legs back. But if he's jumping right back in the playoffs, I do think you want to put him in the most comfortable position to succeed, which is next to MacKinnon and Rantanen. So I think that it's nice to have those options. If he comes back before the playoffs start, I think it would make a lot of sense to see what a Newhook Landeskog duo with you know, Malgin or whoever on the right wing could look like, to give you a kind of like a more offensive-minded third line. I think that's interesting, but it all depends really on how Rodriguez does as a top line winger, if that's where he's going to stay. If they want to keep MacKinnon and Rantanen together with Rodriguez, and that works, then that gives them more flexibility with where to put Landeskog. But if that doesn't work, if Rodriguez does need to be the guy who comes down the lineup, then, you know, then there you go.
That'll be good. What do you think of that, Jacob? I know you started the conversation. What do you think of Landeskog?
I do kind of like the idea of easing him back in if it's in the regular season, but if it's in the playoffs, I think you just got to kind of say, you know, top six, the top six, forget it. You know, the one line that has always intrigued me that they don't go a lot to, but just like from a defensive perspective, Comfort, Nichushkin, and Landeskog could ruin lots. Like that, you know, that has always kind of been the second line in the back of my head. That, you know, you put Go and Nate together with Lekkonen on the top line, and then you just send Comfort, Landeskog, and Nichushkin out to just destroy every other team's top line. Like, that could be, I think, a real difference maker in the playoffs. I think that's where I would like to see him most. But like, if they put the big line back together and it starts working, you know, you can't. It's hard to argue that that's the wrong call.
Yeah, I wonder if sometimes that big line success is a detriment to the balance of the lineup. As weird as that sounds, but like, if you, sometimes you do need to spread the styles a little bit better. I do, though. Like, I'm the same way. That second line sounds just absolutely nasty. Like, like chasing down Lekkonen and MacKinnon and Rantanen, and then being on the end of a shift and they got one off on you, and now it's the second line coming out with fresh legs and you're dying, and it's Valeri Nichushkin barreling in on you.
And then they just pin you in the corner and cycle you to death. I mean, like, it is.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I just think it's a great compliment to what could be like a really high speed go top line, and like would be a really great way to wear teams down over the course of seven games.
Yeah, and then the third line, you could basically make that your best penalty killing group, best defensive group, and then your fourth line is your grinder group, and there you go. So I feel like the lineup is shaping up to be pretty balanced in especially in comparison to what we kind of thought heading into this time of year with the injuries on the table. Evan, is there anything about what we've talked about lineup-wise that you see differently?
No, I love that second line that Jacob, you know, I was going to mention that too, is that second line would be great, because when you look back at the playoffs last year, I don't remember them running that big line a lot, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember them running it that often. And as we've seen, you know, already both through injury and through trial and error, that Bednar will shake up that top six. Like, Evan Rodriguez has played on the first line, and he also played on the fourth line this year. He's been everywhere, right? So, you know, maybe he could roll with Evan Rodriguez on the second line or on the first line, who knows. But yeah, that top six, I feel like, of a Lekkonen, MacKinnon, Rantanen, and then Landeskog, Comfort, and Nichushkin, that'd be an incredible top six. But then again, I also would not be surprised if Bednar kind of switched things up if he could go with that big line just to put them back together and see how they do. I mean, I don't think that would happen right out of the gate, right after Landeskog is coming back from injury. I think he'd need at least a week of game action, I feel like, before he gets that big time play on the first line with the big group. So I think there's not really, it's hard to predict, right? Because we were like this last year too, of like, oh, okay, you know, how is his lineup going to be for game three of the Stanley Cup finals? You know,
yeah.
this works so well in game two, but is he going to keep going with it in game three, or is he going to keep switching it up? You know, so on and so forth. And so, you know, he has the same group of guys, but he's going to use them differently, I feel like, on a nightly basis. Sometimes it feels like at points.
Yeah. It's usually the adjustments he makes from game to game, right? To see kind of what's working, what's not. And then like we saw a lot in the first couple rounds, not a lot changed. Maybe after like game five against St. Louis, we saw a little bit of a shakeup, but even then it wasn't very much. Things were pretty consistent. We kind of just saw guys in the bottom six kind of shuffle places, but the top six was pretty consistent in its structure. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's very much the same this postseason, mostly because I think once it gets into that time of year, it's really about cohesiveness and familiarity. And you want to be able to look to your left and right and have the same guy there and be able to play on the minutiae of each person's game in a way that benefits the outcome and your overall team, you know. So I don't think that the Avs are in as much trouble as even the national media likes to portray them right now. So times are looking good, in my opinion. Speaking of national news, it seems like they're having a GM meeting or GM meetings this week. Some of the things that have been brought to the table are mostly like rules based. They've talked about maybe increasing the penalty for instigating. They've talked about furthering the review for high sticks. And by that, I mean they're expanding that to even minors, because right now it's only majors can be reviewed. So they could review a minor, and their focus is friendly fire high sticks. So like if you're in a collision, McKinnon's play, for example, last year when he got smoked and his own stick broke his face, that would have not been a penalty in this situation. And then another thing they were talking about is imposing possible equipment changes based on some players getting injured via lacerations, like we saw with Evander Kane. And then last year there was a couple of those as well. Are any of those things, do you all have any opinions on any of those things?
The laceration will be interesting, because Landeskog had that. I mean, it was announced in his whole injury list debacle, I guess, that was announced earlier this week, was that he got cut by his skate on his thigh in the bubble playoffs.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that would work.
I always wonder with equipment, it's just like the players kind of have the final say, right? And it's like, no, dude, I'm not going to wear that Kevlar on my wrist. You know, that might be the end of the discussion. What do you think, Jacob?
I mean, we basically went through this already with visors, is that, you know, when they
said
that they're going to be mandatory, there's a huge pushback across the league. You know, there's still some players who are grandfathered into not wearing a visor. And so, like, I'd imagine that it'll unfold the same, where, you know, they say we got to, you know, do this to help the safety of the game. You'll have a bunch of players say, you know, I'm not playing any differently from how I've ever played. And then after a while, I realize, like, oh, right, it's good, like, not having, you know, your wrist sliced, or it's good not having your eye poked out with a stick. Yeah. Like, these things are helpful. It just takes a while to get adjusted to. You know, hockey players are just, they're very stubborn creatures. They're creatures of routine. And so anytime you mess with that routine, like, you're bound to get some pushback.
Yeah, Ezra, do you agree with that? Do you think it's kind of going to be one of those situations?
Completely agree. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like Rantanen already wears them, those wrist guards he's got, and a lot of players do. And I think it makes sense to mandate a little bit of extra player safety, definitely.
Yeah, and then kind of on top of that, I like the addition of being able to review even minor high sticks, because I think that's such a hard infraction to see for what it is in real time, especially for refs who, like, just kind of don't have a chance. Usually what you see and react to is a guy snapping his head back, right? It's not even really the contact with the stick. So giving them a little bit more of a reach during those reviews, I think will benefit the game. I know it's like everybody says it's a slippery slope. You don't want to stop the game and take too long, but I feel like this is a necessary stoppage. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it should be theoretically a quick review if you got hit with your own stick, right? Like a lot of times what happens with it is, you know, some guy's trying to lift your stick and you're battling and then two sticks go up in the air and the ref can't really see which one it is. And so, you know, you look at a video for 10, 15 seconds. You know, I am universally opposed to review in the sense that, like, I think it degrades the game and it forces referees to make calls that they normally wouldn't make to lean on review. But you're starting to see across sports getting a lot quicker, like football especially, the last, like, which has been, I think, the worst offender of all the review.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's a lot faster lately. And, like, the NHL, I think, is pretty cognizant of it. And so something like, seeing which stick hit your face, that shouldn't necessitate a really long review. You know, that's not like trying to determine goalie contact and then intent and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if it just goes to Toronto to do it, like, the ref makes the call, and before they even get to the bench, Toronto's already like, yeah, that was right, or yeah, no, that was wrong.
Then we're good.
That's nice and simple. Yeah. And it should be that easy. It really should be that easy. But there's also always the possibility that they're like, we're going to let the refs make their own decisions. So the refs have to skate to the bench,
yeah,
the penalty box, get the monitor, get the whole thing. And it could really slow things down if they're stupid about it. So we'll see. I don't really count on the NHL to make the right decision ever. So probably going to be the bad one. But I do think it's a good idea.
Yeah, well, I'm be curious to see what actually goes from like being on the table to being taken seriously, because there's a lot of traditional people still in management in the NHL, and I think the majority of general managers are a little more conservative in terms of the way the game has changed via review and TV and all that stuff than I think they even led on to the public. But that kind of leads us to the final segment of the day, where I just kind of want to get some fun and bold predictions from the three of you. Who's ready? Because I always ask the person who's not ready. Evan, you're ready? All right, Evan, you can go first.
I also mostly just don't want Ezra to take my prediction. Oh, again. Like I knew when you were going to ask about bold predictions, I already had this one locked up. We already talked about this guy today, and we've already talked about, you know, how surprisingly good he's been as of late. And yeah, how I have a piece coming out on Tuesday, as of this recording, about him, Dennis Mulligan.
Nice.
He gets two goals against the Toronto Maple Leafs. he gets two goals against his former team in Toronto.
That was Doc Brown saying 1.21 gigawatts. All right, I'd like to see it, because if he does it, that'll just bolster the heat and the traction of your article, baby. So let's hope Mulligan just hat trick. Why not? That's my bold prediction. I'll say it here. Mulligan hat trick, because that'd be fun, right? To pretend that's like I knew that was going to happen.
I thought two was bold, and then you went for a hat trick. Yeah, holy cow!
Well, I just
I'll take four goals.
He scores every Avalanche goal for the remainder of the season.
Who needs Nathan MacKinnon when you have Dennis Mulligan?
Yeah. All right, Jacob, what about you? Let's see. What is your bold prediction this week?
My bold prediction this week is the Avs play their most complete game of the year against Toronto and keep them under three goals.
I love it. That's a better prediction too. So that's the under hitting hard, Avs versus Maple Leafs.
3-2 final, something like that. Maybe they get an empty netter.
Hope you're right.
Yeah, that would be a big, it would be a big notch on the belt in terms of the Avs defensive prowess heading into the postseason. So,
you know, they've shown flashes.
Yeah, they have.
The San Jose game, like, I was at that game. That's one might be the most dominant, you know, first like 30 minutes of a game I've ever seen the Avs play. And then, you know, you have the third period against Arizona just now where they, you know, held them to no shots. And so it's right there. Like, they haven't put together three straight periods. I kind of feel like they don't do it tonight, but I think that Toronto, they've had that game circled since the schedule was announced, and they'll show up for that one.
Fair enough. I agree. Ezra, your turn.
Yeah, I think I want to talk about somebody we already talked about too, and that's JT Compher. He follows up this five-game scoreless streak with a three-game point streak.
Hey, I love that, especially because you gave me the opportunity to use this drop. And I'm dying to use that drop. I was actually going to use it as like a segue into the end of the show. Say like, if the Avs win tonight, you know. But, and then I was thinking about using it when Evan was talking about spring break, as I'm like, Evan, chug a beer, and then so I'm just so excited that I got to use it. Now I got to use it three ways because I was so excited. So that's,
I had no idea that was in the queue. That's amazing.
Oh no, I put it in there, so please God don't get us, Warner Brothers. But but I actually don't even know if that's who made it. But anyways, it's a short clip. I think that works.
I think we'll be okay. FCC.
Altitude does it all the time, but I think they're registered. But hey, anyway, I am Adrian Hernandez. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab. Before I further incriminate myself, I think I will end the program. I was joined today by Ezra, Jacob, and Evan, contributors of milehighhockey.com. We will be back with you on Monday, hopefully. If not, we will inform you otherwise. And head on over to the website for everything Avalanche and follow us on Twitter. Share with your fellow Avalanche fans. We love you. Hopefully the Avalanche beat the Canadians tonight. You all have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.